From today onwards, we will start reciting the prayers in English. Whole prayers, I think. We have the translation. Prostration to the perfection of wisdom, mother of the Buddhas of three times, which is unutterable, incomprehensible, inexpressible, unborn, unceasing, the nature of space, and the object of the self-cognizant primordial wisdom. Thus I have heard one time, the Blessed One was dwelling in Rajagriha on mast of Arjuna's mountain, together with a great assembly of monks and a great assembly of bodhisattvas. At the time, the Blessed One was absorbed in the concentration of countless aspects of phenomena called profound illumination. At that time also, the superior Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, was looking perfectly at the practice of profound perfectional wisdom, looking perfectly at the emptiness of inherent existence, also of the five aggregates. Then through the power of Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra said to the superior Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, how should a son of a lineage train who wishes to engage in the practice of the profound perfection of wisdom? Thus he spoke, and the superior Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, replied to the Venerable Shariputra as follows. Shariputra, whatever son or daughter of the lineage wishes to engage in the practice of the profound perfection of wisdom should look perfectly like this. Subsequently, looking perfectly and correctly at the emptiness of inherent existence, also of the five aggregates. Form is empty, emptiness is form. Emptiness is not other than form. Form also is not other than emptiness. Likewise, feeling, discrimination, Shariputra, like this, all phenomena are merely empty, having no characteristics. They are not produced and do not cease. They have no defilement and no separation from defilement. They have no decrease and no increase. Therefore, Shariputra, in emptiness there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional factors, no consciousness. There is no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no form, no sound, no smell, no taste, no tactile object, no phenomenon. There is no eye element, and so forth up to no mind element, and also up to no element of mental consciousness. No ignorance and no exhaustion of ignorance, and so forth up to no aging and death, and no exhaustion of aging and death. Likewise, there is no suffering, origin, cessation, or path, no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and also no non-attainment. Therefore, Shariputra, because there is no attainment, Bodhisattvas rely on and abide in the perfection of wisdom. Their minds have no obstructions and no fear. Passing utterly beyond perversity, they attain the final nirvana. Also, all the Buddhas who reside perfectly in the three times, having relied upon the perfection of wisdom, became manifest and complete Buddhas in the state of unsurpassed, perfect and complete enlightenment. Therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurpassed mantra, equal to the unequaled mantras, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies all suffering, since it is not false, should be known as the truth. The mantra of the perfection of wisdom is spoken. Tetyatha, Om Gade Gade Para Gade Para Sam Gade Bodhi Swaha. Shariputra, a Bodhisattva, great being, should train in the profound perfection of wisdom like this. Then the Blessed One arose from that concentration and said to the superior Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva, the great being, that he had spoken well. Good, good, O son of the lineage, it is like that. Since it is like that, just as you have revealed, in that way the profound perfection of wisdom should be practiced, and the Tathagatas will also rejoice. When the Blessed One had said this, the Venerable Shariputra, the superior Bodhisattva, the great being, and the entire circle of disciples, as well as the worldly beings, gods, humans, demigods, and spirits, were delighted and highly praised what had been spoken by the Blessed One. Tetyatha om gade gade para gade para sam gade bodhi soha. Om gade gade para gade para sam gade bodhi soha. Tetyatha om gade gade para gade para sam gade bodhi soha. Namo Guru Buddha Dharma Sangha, the great mother Prashna Paramita. Through the power and strength of making prostrations to you all, may these true words of ours be achieved. Just as before, when by contemplating the profound meaning of the perfection of wisdom and reciting its words, Indra overcame all the harms of Maras, non-humans, and so forth. In the same way, by our contemplating the profound meaning of perfection of wisdom, and reciting its words, may all the harms towards our spiritual practices, such as Maras, non-humans, be overcome. May they become non-existent. May they be pacified. May they be thoroughly pacified. May I beseech you to thoroughly pacify all the outer and inner obstacles of harm for the achievement of perfect. May all kinds of interferences, diseases, and possessing spirits be pacified. May we be separated from unfavorable conditions, and may we achieve favorable conditions and everything excellent. Through this fortune, may they be, at this time, happiness and health. I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, Supreme Sangha, until enlightenment is attained. May I achieve Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings by means of gathering merit, such as by performing generosity. May all sentient beings possess happiness and the cause of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings not to be parted from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings dwell in equanimity, which is free from attachment and anger towards both near ones and distant ones. There are no other great monks, even in heaven, like you, the great man leader, not in this world, not even in the place of Vaishvaranana, not in the finest places of heavenly palace, and not even in the four directions and four intermediate directions. How could they be, even you search everywhere on this surface, including mountain and forest? Salutations to Maitreya, the Dharma region who dwells in Tushita, whose fire of great compassion burns the fuel which is anger. Light ray of transcendental wisdom removes the darkness of ignorance and liberates sentient beings from samsara. I respectfully pay homage to the Guru and protector, Reverend Manju Ghosha. Your intelligence shines forth like the sun, unclouded by the two obscurations. You hold a scriptural text at your heart, symbolic of the seeing of all things as they are. Those who are caught in the prison of samsara are confused in the darkness of ignorance and are overwhelmed by their suffering. Your speech with 60 melodious ways, you preach the sentient beings to whom you are compassionate as to your only child. Your proclamation of Dharma is like a roaring thunder that awakens beings from the stupor of delusions and frees them from the iron chains of their karma. You wield a sword of wisdom, hewing down suffering wherever its sprouts appear, clearing away the darkness of ignorance. Primordially pure, your princely body is the embodiment of the perfection of Bodhisattva, dwelling on the 10th bhumi. I pay homage to Manjugosha, who dispels ignorance and whose body is adorned with the 112 adornments or marks of Buddha. With the brilliance of your wisdom, O compassionate one, illuminate the darkness encompassing my mind, enlighten my intelligence and wisdom so that I may gain insight into the words of the Buddha and texts that explain them. Homage to Nagarjuna, who bestows us 100 rivers of multitude treatises, who manifested 1,000 ways of collection of Madhyamika texts, who is beautiful with thousands of precious qualities. Homage to the great Rangdan. What's that? Now, the homage to Sakyapandita. You who have wide eyes, knowing all objects of knowledge, you who possesses compassion for all sentient beings to achieve wholesomeness and goodness, you who possesses the power of performing inconceivable activities, I respectfully prostrate to you, the Guru Manjugosha. The mandala offering, having smeared the ground with scented water and scattered flowers on it, this Mount Semeru, adorned with 4 continents, sun and moon, by offering it to the Buddha field, may all sentient beings enjoy the perfectly pure Buddha land. May you turn the wheel of Dharma that is common to both Hinayana and Mahayana, according to the minds of sentient beings and different capacity of their intellect. Now the 8th chapter, the chapter which presents the proper manual, proper way of undertaking the practice of perfection of meditation. The first verse instructs the Mahayana followers, especially to Mahayana followers, instruct the Mahayana, especially Mahayana followers, to undertake the practice by showing the reason why we should really, sort of genuinely undertake the practice of it. Having developed enthusiasm, enthusiastic joy, by means of studying and reflecting, by means of studying and reflecting on the meanings that one has sort of gained through studying, reflecting the method of meditation, opposing factors of meditation. Method of meditation includes the how to sort of overcome the five major sort of faults of instilling the one-pointedness within oneself, as well as how to sort of overcome the five major opposing factors, which obstructs us. These opposing factors, we possess, the practitioners, especially the beginners, possess these opposing factors. These five opposing factors are related with our mind. The fifth one is related with the manner of putting sort of effort in it, putting effort by one's body, putting the physical effort as well as mental effort. Anyhow, physical effort comes from the mental sort of different physical sort of efforts comes from the different sort of mental efforts. So, in brief, it says, having developed enthusiasm within oneself, enthusiastic joy in undertaking the meditation, having gained the theoretical understanding by studying, and then through having gained the convinced understanding of the presentation of the meditation. In those ways, means in this way, the text, the verse here has in this way, should be in those ways, means in the previous, the manner of building up, manner of overcoming the laziness, manner of building up or amassing the enthusiastic joy in one's precepts or one's commitments. One's precepts and one's commitments. He did in that way. Now he is showing now to us that we should, individual follower, individual practitioner, should inwardly sort of think in the same way as the author did by himself. So I should play, when the text say I, that must refer to oneself. I should place my mind in concentration or samadhi. So concentration, samadhi, the general definition of samadhi or concentration or meditation. First, we should know the general, as pointed in the Sutra Alamkara as well as two Abhidhammas. The general definition is, it refers, meditation or concentration refers to the mental state, the practitioner's mental state, which focus one-pointedly on the object, any kind of object on which you habituate, on which you familiarize yourself, after producing the convinced understanding of it. So in brief, Gewe Mikpala Sechikwisem in Tibetan, the mental state which is one-pointed, which is the mental state which is focused one-pointedly on the virtuous object. That is the general definition. For example, when we do the sadhana, when we do our sort of personal practice in our room, we start while doing the sadhana, we start from the beseeching prayer. And we do that. At that time, the lineage gurus, including our own sort of root guru, is the focusing object of the beseeching prayer. And that when we do that, that time, our mind, while doing the recitation, while reciting the words, while doing reciting the recitation, our mind should be one-pointedly focused on the visualized guru. Or if someone has thangas in front of the meditation seat, or images of the gurus, the very first beginners can sort of train in visualizing properly through sort of focusing on those objects, outer objects. Once you have trained yourself in the visualization properly, then you do not need the thangas and all these. I can tell that because in Kempo Abhyo Rinpoche's room, unlike in the ordinary monks, there is no any sort of shrine in his room, no any offerings, no any sort of shrines, no any thangas and photos and so on. That means that he can sort of, while doing his practices, he has the ability, he has the habituation, strong, stable habituation of visualizing sort of the objects very clearly. So many of the beginners, many of the Tibetans in rooms or lamas, or they are shrines. So these are as an embodiment of the visualization. These are the embodiments of our visualization, embodiments to generate faith in them. Embodiments to generate faith in them. So anyhow, when we do the beseeching prayer, while reciting the sentences, the words, our mind should be focused on the images of the gurus, visualized images, or the actual sort of images of thanga or statues or so on. Photos of guru or lineage gurus. And then when our mind is one-pointedly focused on that visualized images or outer images, that mental state is known as concentration or the meditation, what is known as meditation in English nowadays. I'm not sure whether that word shows the real sort of real significance or real test. And this is the one-pointedness for example, the heretics, the Hindu practitioners, Hindu sadhus, in accordance with the Buddhist philosophy, Buddhists believe that Hindu heretics did possess, and present time also, they do possess the samadhi. They do have the concentration. There were many sort of Hindu heretics. There are still, I think, many Hindu practitioners who have gained this concentration, first level concentration, second level concentration, and third and fourth, the form sort of concentration of concentration of form absorption. And they also have a concentration or formless concentration of formless absorption. So they do have. So ordinary beings can also have some kind of concentration, to differentiate our concentration, the Mahayana followers' concentration. We need to identify within ourselves the uncommon definition of the the perfection of meditation. So the general is same. The general, what you call the general aspect, is the same. It differs from the other concentration from the viewpoint of the preliminary. The preliminary, any intention or the motivation, and the aspect or special aspect, the wisdom or the insight of knowing the non-inherently existent of three factors: object to be focused on, and the mind, object to be focused on, and the mind which places on the object, and the actions of placing on the object. So when someone has this sort of insight, when someone's concentration or the one-pointedness is associated with that kind of insight, there should be with the actual concentration, there should be this kind of association with it. And at the end of the practices and the merits as a concluding sort of parts of one's practice, the merits one has gained through undertaking that meditation should be sort of dedicated to attain the complete Buddhahood for the sake of others. So with these three sort of association, one in the preliminary, the second in the actual state, and the third during the concluding part of your practice, then one-pointedness on the virtuous object. One-pointedness on the virtuous object becomes the perfection of absorption or meditation. Or so this is the mind in concentration. If one asks why one has to place one's mind in focus, then the following two verses show the reason why we should, let's say, train ourselves in that mental state, the mental state of one-pointedness. For the person, the text says, for the person whose mind is distracted, like our present mental state, thinking of one's relatives, one's parents, one's relatives, one's close friends, one's co-workers, and many things. If one is professional teacher, then one has many students. So many students. And so out of attachment to these, our minds becomes so discursive, thinking of all the trivial purposes of all the related ones. In other words, we interfere out of attachment. Our mind interfere with the trivial purposes, trivial sort of purposes of all the related ones. That is what means the distraction. That is the distraction. For the person whose mind is distracted, dwells between the fangs of disturbing conceptions or discursive thoughts, dwells or live or spend their life spent their life, any life, between the fangs of disturbing conceptions, disturbing conception, or discursive thoughts, or distractions, or so on. And then, as a result of letting ourselves in the grip of these discursive thoughts, then these discursive thoughts lead us in many sort of mundane activities, lead us in many various sort of mundane, especially the negative sort of activities, and then they place us in a misery. So reflecting on that sort of faults, these kind of faults, the author recommends the followers, Mahayana followers, especially the Mahayana followers, to attempt to place their mind in our concentration. However, through solitude of body and mind, no distractions will occur. This shows what kind of person should qualify to undertake this kind of higher practice, the meditation, practice of meditation. Then not only in this text, but also in Abhidhamma Kosha, they say the person who has habituation of living in solitude place. In another word, who has a physical solitude. Physical solitude means not spending his daytimes mostly in a crowd, with one or two or three or four. Duzi means a crowd. Person who likes to spend most of their time in the crowd with some kind of companion, that doesn't sort of qualify to undertake the practice of meditation. And also the person who has a discursive thought, means who thinks so much, who thinks again and again, until they are in sleep, they think again and again of all the activities of this life, gaining something of this life. So these two kinds of people are not qualified, are not the suitable candidate to this high level of practice of samadhi. So however, if asked, that is one question is better that. If one asks oneself, how should the distraction, discursive thought, how one should overcome or one should relinquish the discursive thought, then the text gives this answer. Through solitude of body and mind, physical isolation and mental isolation. Physical isolation means living in one's own room, spending most of the times in one's own room, that we can see, like Khenpo Abhay Rinpoche. He's the example. Living example. Many of the real sort of gurus, they spend most of their days privately in their room. They don't go in the crowds. They don't spend their most of the most most of the their their days in the crowds. While eating, while sort of amassing the force of relinquishment, while eating, while sort of in the middle of the meditation sessions, they spend their time very sort of rare with the people. They do spend some time of their day with the people. That becomes the forces of relinquishment as well. So no distractions will occur. So that means one who lives in a solitude. Through solitude body and through solitude mind. Through solitude body, through solitude mind, no distractions will occur. No distractions will occur. So this is the mean or the method. These are the means keeping oneself, staying oneself alone in one's room most of the time, or staying in a isolated place like a cave or like in any forest or with one or two companions. And then not letting one's mind seeing the faults of falling in the distraction. Seeing the faults of falling in the distractions, not letting one's mind in sort of thinking too much about the persons to whom you have so much attachments, to whom we have so much attachment. These two are the means to overcome or to drive away or to minimize our discursive thoughts. Our distractions. Therefore, I should forsake the worldly life. In the commentary, it says that therefore I should forsake any accompanying. I should sort of for the very beginners, it is not easy. I should forsake. Accompanying other people, outspending most of the time with other people, with other relatives, other friends, out of attachment towards them. This is the meaning there. I should forsake the worldly life means I should sort of give up. I should give up accompanying the relatives and friends or the people to whom one has strong sort of attachment, and completely discard or completely sort of overcome. Cannot overcome completely at the beginning. Step by step, we will be able to follow this instruction step by step, not as it explicitly explicitly shows. That is not possible from our actual experience, from the actual sort of fact we can know. So completely discard distorted conception or discursive thoughts. Worldly life is not forsaken because of attachment to the people. Worldly life means being in a crowd, being with the people to whom one has strong attachments, to whom one is related, maternal relation, family, yeah, that's better, family relation. So worldly life is not forsaken. It means that we cannot forsake this kind of living with the people to whom we have some kind of relations, to whom we have strong attachment, to whom we have attachment. So this worldly life cannot be forsaken by us because of attachment to them. And due to craving for material gain and the like, and due to the craving for the fame in the society, due to the craving for the fame, and due to the craving for some sort of honor in the society, because of that craving or the attachment, that craving or attachment obstruct us to start the meditation, first to keep one-pointedness, keep our mind and one-pointedness on the virtuous object. So seeing the faults, now knowing or seeing the faults of being in a discursive thought or being in a distractions, therefore by entirely forsaking these things, attachment to craving, these things means craving towards the material gain, craving towards the fame and so on, the wise people should behave in the following way, not the that are unlearned or not the sort of I wouldn't say foolish or stupid, unlearned people, opposite of wise, unwise, I would say the wise people. So that is the way of the faults of not being able to be in a physical solitude, not being able to be in a mental solitude. These are features or aspects, some kinds of features or aspects, or the actions done by the unwise people from the viewpoint of the exalted person, not from the viewpoint of our ordinary perception. So the wise people should behave in the following way. In the following way, it shows, it would say, explains or it instructs us to and overcome the attachment towards the people, related people, closer people. It shows the manner of any overcoming or discarding the attachment towards the five sensual objects. I think we talked about that yesterday. Five sensual objects, we talked briefly about that yesterday. Having understood that disturbing conceptions can be eradicated from our mental stream, can be eradicated totally from our mental stream by superior insight, means the insight which sees or which realizes the true ultimate nature of the phenomena, including our aggregates, including our five sort of aggregates. Associated with calm abiding. That implicitly means, indirectly shows that our present sort of wisdom, wisdom of knowing the abstract meaning of suchness, abstract meaning of the ultimate truth, abstract meaning of emptiness. When we sort of think of emptiness, then we have the abstract sort of the image of the emptiness, or the abstract meaning of the emptiness in our concepts. That is not the real emptiness. So that understanding, the simulated understanding, is it the simulated realization, simulated understanding of emptiness. That emptiness is the first step to reach in the direct realization. It is needed, but that alone cannot become the direct antidote to eradicate our disturbing conceptions or disturbing emotions. So here it was superior insight. Superior insight refer to the direct realization, the transcendental wisdom, which is gained by the exalted sort of exalted practitioners. So the superior insight associated with calm abiding. So calm abiding in English. In Tibetan we have word shine. Shine means actually that terms come from the manner of action of that mind, that sort of mind which concentrates, mind which places itself on itself in a focused manner on the virtuous object. Shine. Chame number toba, never shine, any migbe todo zechu neba. So this term I think comes from the way of blessing, the manner of blessing on the object. So calm abiding is fine in a verb sense. That is calm. Calm, I think, doesn't show really with me. Pacified. After having pacified the discursive thoughts, when you place your mind on a virtuous sort of object, as I was giving the example of placing our minds on the visualized images or the outer thanga images or photo images or the statue images. In order to place rightly on that object, first step is to drive away all our discursive thought, pacify all the discursive thoughts. Drive away all our discursive thoughts, and then need to place one's present mind on the any object. Needs to abide one's present mind on the object of one's focus. So that is the real meaning of the calm abiding. What we now say calm abiding. Means, after having pacified the discursive thought. To pacify discursive thought, the following verses, some of the following verses show the faults of falling in the discursive thought. Thinking the faults of any falling in the being in the discursive thought, we can pacify the discursive, we can pacify them. So after having pacified the discursive thought, then mind, placing one's mind or abiding one's mind one pointedly on the object. That is the meaning of calm abiding. In another word, when the concentration, they are synonyms. These are synonyms, concentration or calm abiding, or these are synonyms. They must have the same sort of definition, same kalawata, significance. Associated with calm abiding, first of all, so we need to ask why we really want to, why we strongly wish to do the meditation, do the calm abiding. Do we really do that for the sake of pacifying some kind of immediate frustration or depression or like that? So that is not the right motivation to undertake the samadhi, because of the wrong sort of meditation, the action which is invoked by that motivation will also become inefficient. So from the very sort of beginning, we need to be very alert of our motivation to undertake that samadhi, practice of samadhi. Nowadays, people are so fond of this practice. It is good, you know, for the purpose of overcoming the uneasiness or for the purpose of overcoming the uneasiness. It is good, but we need to keep in our mind that the actual sort of the purpose of undertaking the samadhi is to generate or is to instill the superior insight, is to instill the wisdom, which is the most powerful antidote to eradicate the depression and depression or hypertension or tension or frustration, or which are rooted in the disturbing conceptions. These which are rooted in the disturbing conception. So keeping that in mind in the depth of our heart, with the wisdom, knowing this fact, keeping in the depth of our mind this fact with the wisdom, then our exertion in sort of undertaking the practice, as well as there will be a better and more successful sort of accomplishment in doing such practice. With calm abiding, samadhi, first of all, I should search for calm abiding. Before starting doing the meditation on emptiness, first he recommends, in accordance with the Buddha's teaching, first the author recommends us to establish the samadhi within our mental stream. Without the samadhi, without the concentration, without the base, without the support, the wisdom of emptiness or meditation on emptiness is not possible. Because this samadhi is one of the secondary condition. Samadhi is one of the secondary condition to produce or to generate the meditation on emptiness. So first of all, I should search for calm abiding. This can be, samadhi can be, calm abiding, or the one-pointedness, or the concentration, can be achieved only through the genuine joy in not attaching. Genuine joy in not having attachment. Genuine joy in not sort of craving. Genuine joy in not craving towards to worldly life, means towards the crowds, living in a crowd people, spending most of the time with the people, and also genuine joy in sort of thinking to work or thinking to sort of engage in the activities to gain something in this life. So this worldly life, there are many sort of examples we will have to find out. Teachers cannot give all the examples to the students. So now showing how and why the serious practitioner who strongly sort of long to practice the samadhi or to instill samadhi in themselves, to instill sort of samadhi in themselves. Because of the obsession one transcendent being has for other transcendent beings. Transcendent here, in Tibetan we have impermanent. Transcendent. Of course that is understandable. They will not see their beloved ones again for many thousands of lives. It means that in another translation of Lama Kalsang Gyaltsen, another version says, how can the impermanent means oneself, impermanent referring to oneself, transcendent being to oneself, how can impermanent being, the oneself, be genuinely attached to the transcendent being, the other impermanent beings? That refers to one's relatives, parents, friends, and students, or anyone's teachers, or so many kinds we can say. Because of it, because of so much sort of attachment, so much any craving towards them, and then we sort of out of that attachment, that attachment or the craving overpower us to do some sort of unwholesome actions, to do many unwholesome actions, which propel us in the future to the lower beings, being in the lower realms. So the author is referring to that. So because of it, the pleasant one or the attractive ones cannot be seen for thousands of lives because of the strong craving, strong attachment to the related person, that overpower us, that emotion overpower us to engage, that forces us to engage in many kinds of unwholesome activities. And that unwholesome activities is the karma. And the craving or the attachment is the defilement. And the defilement and the karma, these are the two main causes to take birth in the next life, in any of the six kinds of living creatures. So he's referring like that. Not seeing them. Because of not seeing, this is not referring when we sort of take birth in the next life. Even in this life, when we do not see our sort of loved ones, beloved ones, beloved out of attachment. If it is beloved out of loving kindness, beloved out of compassion, then it is fine. Beloved out of, when not seeing the loving ones, any beloved ones, beloved one, we feel unhappy. That is fact, huh? We feel unhappy. And my mind cannot be, because of uneasiness or upset or unhappiness, then one will not be able to sort of settle or place. Place, settle here is place. One will not be able to place one's mind in the equipoise. In the equipoise here means equipoise. Nyamsha, that's also concentration. Samadhi, that's a synonym of concentration or samadhi. Because of uneasiness, yeah. Because of uneasiness, because of not able to drive away or overcome that uneasiness, because of not knowing how to drive away, because of not knowing, not being able to identify that discursive thought, because of not knowing that discursive thought is the obstruction, obstacle to the samadhi, and because of all many reasons, human beings normally cannot place one-pointedness on the virtuous deeds. Even someone do virtuous deeds, they do outwardly, it seems to be doing virtuous deed, but inside thinking so much here and there. That's why the late eminent Chöbje Rinpoche, once while he was giving instruction in the retreat, he said that you must attempt your best to sort of control your discursive mind. Otherwise, in the manner shown in the instruction, they are very simplified instructions in the triple perception as well, in the section of. In the section of the ultimate bodhicitta, they are very simplified, very simplified sort of instructions, how to do it. So he was instructing us to strongly sort of control our discursive thought. Otherwise, you sit in one room, you spend most of your sort of retreat time in one room with a closed door, and then wrapped your hat with your this, and then you blackened from outside, and then your mind you over here thinking on here and there, and there in every direction you think of, your mind thinks of so many things of past, so many present things happening in the place where you are, or and then you put on the radio again, hear the news of what happening in the another worlds, and then you do meditation again. Think of this is not the right. So he says, my mind cannot be placed in equipoise, means that even if I see them, there is no satisfaction. Even if we see our beloved one, dear ones, our darlings, darlings, there is no satisfaction. And as before, I am tormented by craving to see them. You want to see them again and again, So see them or to be near them. I am tormented by craving to see them or to be near them. Through being attached to living beings. So this one shows first how to pacify the discursive thoughts, which is being brought up in our mental stream by the force of craving towards the beloved ones. By the force of So through being attached to living beings, I am completely obscured from the perfect reality. So that craving or attachment obstructs, because it's obscuration of defilements. We have heard these two, obscuration. They are known as obscuration. Our defilements, our concepts, our ordinary concepts, and our defilements are, and their seed within our mental stream, are known are regarded in the Buddhist philosophy as obscuration, because they obscure us. My defilements, my concepts obscure me to realize my true nature, my true reality. That is why they are non-obscuration. So I am completely obscured from the perfect reality. Means they obscure me to, they obscure the attachment. He is emphasizing on attachment. Attachment to the beloved ones. Not the loving, generating loving kindness to the beloved ones. Generating compassion to the beloved one. That is advisable. We can do. But they do not obscure us to realize our reality. Compassion, loving kindness, they become the secondary condition to instill the realization. They are methods. They are the skillful means to reach inside ourselves. Loving kindness and compassion, habituating or generating loving kindness and compassion towards the beloved, towards the neutral people, towards the distant people, distant beings. These bring us closer to the realization of our true nature. But our craving and desirous attachment towards these obscure or obstruct us to reach nearer to the realization of our true reality, our true nature. So that is, I am completely obscured from the perfect reality. My disillusionment, I think my aversion towards the cyclic existence, towards the suffering nature of the cyclic existence. Cyclic existence here referred has two kinds, contained and contender. I think English words, contained refer to the beings who dwell in the world. A container refers to the world. World is round, including the ocean and the earth and the different sort of different color abode, different six different abodes of the six different beings, six different sentient beings. So with the cyclic existence, my aversion towards cyclic existence perishes or declines. Aversion towards that out of craving, out of sort of tiravada, when we do not control our craving, do not sort of control our craving towards the dear ones, then that craving or the desirous attachment causes our aversion towards the cyclic existence to decline. So perishes or decline. And in the end, I am tortured by sorrow from being separated from them. When you need to separate from the dear ones, then you feel so much sad or upset or because of that craving, not because of loving kindness or compassion. Loving kindness or compassion, I think His Holiness Dalai Lama was giving so much emphasis on that, that these positive emotions are associated with some kind of wisdom. These positive emotions are rooted in the wisdom. Whereas the negative emotions like craving, attachment, or all these, they are associated with ignorance. They are rooted in ignorance. Because of rooted in ignorance, the manner of seeing out of the attachment, out of the craving, the manner of seeing the other doesn't sort of accord, doesn't accord with the object. The aspect of this misconception, the craving attachment, these craving and attachment, craving or attachment is a kind of misconception. That is why we say, or disturbing misconception. That is why this translation gives all kinds of defilements are referred as disturbing misconception. Because of that, then that brings the suffering, the mental suffering. When you separate from the dear ones, then you have, for example, the wise teacher, between the wise teacher and wise disciple, when they separate, they do not feel any kind of upset. Teacher doesn't feel any upset because of separating from the disciple. Wise disciple doesn't feel upset because of knowing the fact that the separation is the end of gathering. When you have this kind of insight or wisdom in you with the faith, then that wisdom doesn't let you in the suffering. That wisdom doesn't bring up the sort of suffering, mental suffering. When the ordinary beings do not have that kind of understanding which fits with the relative nature, because of ignorance of that relative nature, then automatically that upset comes in us. In the end, I am tortured by sorrow. By thinking only of them, I should look at the clock, again and again. By thinking only of them, out of a strong attachment, the life will pass without having accomplished meaning. Without any meaning means life. This here means that life will pass. Our life will pass without sort of having accomplished any sort of purposeful actions. In another word, without having accomplished wholesome, beneficial objectives. Furthermore, impermanent friends and relatives will even destroy the Dharma which lead to permanent liberation. That is case. Very ignorant parents. There are so many cases nowadays. Many ignorant Tibetan ignorant parents thinking of this life only, who have a strong craving of this life. It is strong craving. When they put the boy in the monastery. When they have difficulty in bringing up, and then when boys reach age 18, 20, 23, and they motivate them to stay with them, to lead the family, to the karsa. Take the responsibility of family's livelihood and so on. So this means here, will even destroy the dharma of yourself, dharma your spirituality, will even destroy your own spirituality, which leads yourself to the liberation on behalf of them as well. So this shows the general sort of fault of having so much craving or having so much desirous attachment towards the towards the sentient beings, towards the beings. Now it shows that the sentient beings, especially the unwise beings, unwise people, whoever is unwise, because in the text it says childish. Childish, in the philosophical term, it can be referred to any of the three. Childish, opposite of elders. Childish, opposite of exalted person. Aryas. Arya means the realized, exalted sort of practitioner or the people. Childish, opposite of wise man. Here, the commentary says, wherever the word childish is, one should refer to the two letter ones, mainly the third one, unwise people. It doesn't refer to the children. Childish doesn't refer to the children. They are innocent. Childish doesn't refer to the second one. All the ordinary beings are the opposite of the exalted person. So here it refers to the unwise, mainly the unwise one. If I behave in the same way as childish, this shows that the unwise people are not suitable to be combined. Unwise people are not suitable to be combined. Is this right? Huh? To accompany. Oh, thank you. Not suitable to be accompanied. So if I behave in the same way as the childish, you accompany with the unwise people and acts in the same way they behave, then that is the wrong. I shall certainly proceed to lower realms. And if I am led there by those unequal to the noble ones, in other words, by not following the paths on which the earlier adepts went through, by those unequal ones, means by not following the footsteps of the unwise people, whether it's your parents or whether it's your friends, or if you follow in the footsteps of your dear ones, of your unwise dear ones, then what is the use of entrusting, accompanying myself to the childish? That means that I think that is understandable. Meaning is clear. And the next verse shows that while accompanying the unwise, sort of so much attached, the parents or friends or relatives or any kind who are unwise in terms of spirituality, is better, huh? In terms of spirituality, who are unwise in spirituality. One moment they become friends. You are not beneficial to them while accompanying. Because in one moment, when you sort of do something which accords with their wishes, they become friends. One moment they become friends. And the next instant, and one time, even you sort of, even you undeliberately sort of acts, in the next instant, even out of undeliberation. It's not easy. And there, even you sort of act something wrong, something which is sort of against the wishes of them, then they become enemies. Even the relatives, I had this experience with my nieces, with my niece and my nephews, children of my sister, I really have this experience. They become friendly when I do something good, which is something which is good for them. And when I act something against their wishes, then they become aggressive and they like that. In the next instant, they become enemies. Since they become angry even in joyful situation, that means that since they become angry, they become sort of upset, or when you attempt to bring them in a spiritual sort of good manner, bring them in a good way of working or good way of living in the family, and they become angry. So they become angry even in joyful situation, or even you bring them in the source of joy, that is better. Even you bring them towards the source of joy. It is truly difficult to please the unwise people. Truly difficult to please them, please the unwise people. So seeing this fact, he recommends us to sort of minimize or overcome minimize the strength of our cravings, and then step by step overcome our sort of craving towards them. They become angry when something of benefit is said. And they also turn me away from what is beneficial. They also sort of, the more powerful sort of relatives, more powerful parents who have the more power of the family. They turn me away from what is beneficial. If I do not listen to what they say, they become angry, and hence the anger lead them to the lower realm. Their anger lead them to the lower realms. They are envious of their superior. So now, this shows the earlier two, the 10th and 11th stanzas, shows that you cannot be that much beneficial to them. Now the latter shows that they cannot be that much beneficial to ourselves. So they are envious of their superiors, and competitive with equals, and sort of arrogant, generate arrogance. They are arrogant, generates arrogance towards inferiors, conceited when praised, and if anything unpleasant is said, they become angry. Thus, never is any benefit derived from the childish. Means there never any kind of benefits derives by associating with them. Through associating with the childish, out of desirous attachment, there will certainly ensue unwholesomeness, such as praising oneself, belittling or blaming or criticizing or despising others, and talks about the cyclic existence out of strong attachment towards it. Different worldly sort of activities, different mundane sort of activities, talk about the different mundane activities out of attachment towards them. Devoting myself to others in this way will bring about nothing but misfortune. So spending most of the times in such way out of craving with the unwise people will bring about nothing but misfortune, because they have not been beneficial to me. They have not been that much beneficial to me in terms of this life purposes, they might have been sort of beneficial to us. But this means the beneficial of spiritual beneficial. Because they have not been beneficial to me, and I shall not be that much beneficial to them. So reflecting or contemplating on the faults of maintaining, sustaining the craving or desirous attachment to them, in order to be in a pacified state, mental state, pacified mental state. In order to be in a pacified mental state, we need to overcome the. It doesn't say that we have to separate from the parents or relatives or friends or like that. It says that we need to sort of overcome our craving. We need to minimize or overcome our craving. Doesn't say that we mustn't live with the parents. Doesn't say that we mustn't enjoy our time with the dear ones and so on. There are spiritual way of enjoying times with them. Of course, there are. Therefore, I should flee far away from childish people. The childish means unwise related ones. When you meet them, and after staying long, sort of long time, separated from them, in your own sort of room or in the isolated place, such as cave, and so forth. When you meet them, when they come to meet you, or when they are encountered, means when you meet them, I should please them by pleasing contact. You should greet them by pleasing contact. Out of the gratitude, especially to the grateful ones, parents, father, mother, or anyone who are so much grateful to you in this life, especially to them, when you meet them after the long separation, I should please them by pleasing sort of conduct, greet them in a pleasing manner, and to chat them, discuss them, spend some time with them in a pleasing sort of conduct, pleasing manner. I should behave well merely out of courtesy, means that showing neither attachment nor sort of some kind of irritation towards them, nor some kind of karsa, envy or irritation towards the person who have come to meet you. In the same way, the manner is, now the following shows the manner of not only the parents, also the sponsors also. In the same way as a bee takes honey from a flower without attaching the flower, without craving the flower. In that manner, that I should take merely what is necessary for the practice of Dharma from them. But remain unfamiliar as though I had never seen them before. And the following, this is also the fault of the general sort of unwise and people, general faults of the normal sort of unwise people. If we change the orders of this verse, then I think we would know, I think there will be a better sort of sense. If I nurture self-importance, thinking that I have much material wealth, as well as I am honored in the society. I am revered by many people. I'm honored in my society, in the section of my society. And many people like me. If one take pride in such qualities of yourself, then that comes, I think. Then after death, fears or misery will arise. This shows that when we spend our lifetime in the societies, then there is a danger of cementing our craving or attachment, there's also danger of any stabilizing or cementing our pride, the negative sort of pride. So these are the cases mentioned above. You means to tell oneself. You, totally confused mind, to tell to, this is the manner of sort of talking to our mind. Seeing the earlier sort of faults, the earlier cases, you, to talk to our mind, totally confused mind, by piling up of whatever objects you are attached to, misery a thousandfold will ensue. Means, while spending one's life with the crowds, with the family, or within a sort of family and so on. So this means that as many objects of craving or attachment you sort of pile up while living with the society, the manifold, the thousandfold of miseries will befall on us, or on me in the future. So thinking in that way, thinking the faults of sort of having strong craving or attachment, out of spending time in a crowd, out of craving and attachment towards the dear ones or related ones, thinking in that way, the faults of that actions, we need to, it he recommends us to, overcome. There's several ways of overcoming. In the first step, we need to minimize the numbers of generating the craving day by day. Hence, the wise should not be attached. Hence, the wise should not attach. Should not attach is better. Should not, must not attach. Must not any generate craving. Wise, hence the wise practitioner, followers, must not any generate cravings towards the related ones. Because fear is born from craving or a desirous attachment. Fear here refers to the miseries of the lower limbs, or as also miseries, or even if you take birth in the higher realms. Fear is born from attachment. With a firm mind, understand well that it is the nature of these things to be discarded. Means with their firm sort of wisdom, knowing the relative reality of the natural sort of separation from the natural. In one day we will have to separate from one's own dear ones. That is the nature. So he means that with a firm mind, understand well that it is the nature of these. This is the nature of, nature of becoming separation from these things, means from the people to whom you ignorantly or whom you naturally sort of, to whom you naturally generate so much love or desirous attachment, things to be discarded. Okay.
With this merit, may I attain omniscience and defeat the force of mental affliction. May all sentient beings be liberated from the ocean of samsara, which is disturbed by the strong waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. Just as Manju Gosha knows all, so as Samanta Bhadra does, may I follow all of them and dedicate all the merits. The place which became a supreme refuge, nourishing the northern area, filled with oceans of scholars and saints, may the Sakya teachings which illuminate the teachings of the Buddha in the land of snow prosper.